And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
KGO, she distinguished herself as an award-winning reporter at KCBS Radio in San Francisco and KIRO Radio in Seattle. Recently, Lynn was selected as a permanent substitute host for Bob Brinker on the nationally syndicated radio program Money Talk. Lynn is also the author of Sahablo Dinero, The Everyday Guide to Financial Success. The Family Planning Guide is written in both English and in Spanish. In addition to her work in radio, Lynn is active in several community and nonprofit organizations. Welcome to the show, Lynn. How are you today?
Thank you. It's a privilege to be with you. I'm just fine.
Well, good. I'm glad to have you on, and thanks so much for joining us here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. I guess the first place to start is, no matter, depending on who you talk to, the economy is either getting better or worse, and it very much depends. From where you sit in San Francisco, how do you view the economy? Are things getting any better?
Oh, the economy is definitely getting any better. I think anyone who says it's getting worse may not be following current events. We have a thaw in hiring, a reduction in the number of pink slips being handed out, certainly not as quickly as we'd like to see them. We've had a significant improvement in credit availability to larger firms. It's trickling down to smaller firms now.
Mm-hmm.
Our durable goods orders, our manufacturing sector is going great guns. The real estate market is still miserable, and of course that hurts people in the Central Valley and the Imperial County and all around the interior of California even more than it hurts along the West Coast here in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Nevertheless, there is hope that should this thing bottom out, maybe by the end of this year or middle of this year, we can see a small upturn happening in late 2012.
Well, that is encouraging news, because there are some that are saying that there are dire things just around the corner, but I'm glad to hear a more optimistic, upbeat view of things. Now,
Bill, there are always dire things just around the corner. I try to stick with the facts as I see them happening.
That's always a good thing to do. Now, let me turn our attention to the people who really lost a large portion of their savings in the recent financial collapse. I mean, trillions of dollars of wealth were just erased overnight. An entire decade of investing and savings was wiped out. People are looking to preserve capital today as much as they are looking to grow their money. So what tips do you have for us to help make sure that we can not only preserve our capital, but possibly even increase our wealth?
Okay, well, first I want to make it very clear that capital preservation, preserving your capital, is a strategy. It's an investment strategy. The main goal, of course, protecting the money you have to invest. But it's not as simple as just stuffing your money into your mattress, Billy, and then praying that your health doesn't catch fire. Because you have to make sure that the investments you make grow at a rate that at least equals inflation. And that way you've preserved the value of your capital. That's point one.
Mm-hmm.
Point two, before you can practice capital preservation, you've got to get some capital to preserve.
There you go.
Yeah, and you mentioned people lost a lot of it. So as difficult as it is under the current circumstances, you have to save regularly, if possible, automatically. You know, when I was researching the book, Se Habla Dinero, I discovered from the Pew Charitable Trust that more than half of Latinos don't save any money at all for retirement. And on average, only a quarter who can take advantage of any employer retirement plan. And that was a big eye-opener. Now, life's a balancing act. No one says you have to starve or go without shoes in the rain to save money, but maybe what you might want to do is figure out what you're going to need for retirement and how much that's going to take from what you earn every month. Then see if you can live on what you earn if you subtract that from your income. Now, it's tough. But one thing it does is it makes clear that participating in a 401k or an IRA, whether it's a Roth or a regular, is important. It also teaches you that if you start early and save regularly, you can save and not have to eat top ramen every day. I mean, you can save and be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And by figuring out what you need to save, you're more aware of what you do when you waste money, say on late fees for credit cards or ATM charges or having to pay high interest rates on what you borrow because your credit rating is bad. So let's say you do the smart thing and you save some money. All right, now, point three, how do you invest in a way that's safe? First thing, don't get greedy. Any investment that promises a very high rate of return also carries a high risk. I mean, you get paid to take risk. If you want something safe, you get paid less. Now, that's the downside to capital preservation, especially since people are scrambling to make up for what they lost.
Right.
And,
No, no, go ahead. I was just going to say, if you look at a bank, if you put money into a savings deposit in a bank, you're getting less than 1% in many cases. I mean, that's the security value trade-off that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And there's another downside to capital preservation strategy, and that is inflation can overcome investments that don't pay enough. When you're talking about that savings account, Billy, that's an investment that may not pay you enough to overcome any kind of inflation. Our inflation rate over the last year is now, I think, 2.1%. Certainly not high, but it is picking up speed, and there are fears that people's wages will not keep pace with it. All right, but we've also seen, as you mentioned earlier, what happens when you take too much risk, right? You can lose everything. So what do? You seek balance. That's what I said earlier. You know, life is a balancing act, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mix in a stock index or dividend-paying stocks or other less safe investments that have higher returns to help you not only preserve the dollar amount you've saved and invested, but to preserve its value in the face of inflation. Now, how do you do this? Well, in part, it depends on when you want to get to your cash. If it's soon, you might want to put your cash into a money market account. That's an interest-bearing bank account, not a money market mutual fund, but a money market account. It's liquid and is there for you if you need it right away. You have limited number of checks you can write on it, but usually the rate is a little bit more than a standard passbook savings account.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saving a little farther out, say for a car or a home, look into certificates of deposit. Now, they require that you hand your money over to a credit union or a bank for a set amount of time in return for a set amount of interest. And if you take the money out before the term, you pay a penalty. So here's something that you can do, though, to actually enhance what are still very low rates on CDs right now, Billy.
Oh, I know.
All right, you can set up a CD ladder. You know, like a ladder you put against your home, step by step.
And what is a CD ladder?
All right, what you do, well, first of all, it boosts your return. Let's make it clear so that people know what that is. And it gives you access to your money at the same time. You divide your money into five piles, say, all right? Your first pile, you buy a one-year CD. Next pile, a two-year, which gives you a little higher interest. Next pile, a three-year, a little higher interest. A four-year, and then a five-year. And so it goes, right?
All right.
In 1 year, when the CD comes due, take it and put it into a five-year CD. Well, the next year, just 1 year, your two-year comes due, right?
Right.
You take that, you put that into a five-year CD. So that every year you have access to a fifth of your money, but you're getting much higher rates of return on it when you invest in a longer-term CD.
I see. Very clever. I like that.
You like that, huh?
Yeah, that's great.
Now, there are those who say, well, you don't want to invest 5 years out. And that may be true if you're worried about inflation, but given the alternatives, this isn't a bad way because every year you can shop for a better rate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then there are bonds. That's debt. You know, a stock is equity. You own a piece of something. And a bond is when you lend money, whether it's to the government or to your school district, whatever. Especially treasuries. Those are the treasuries. Those are the federal debt, right?
Right.
They're backed by taxes. And they're safe. That's why when a big emergency blows up anywhere in the world, where does the money run to?
It runs right into T-bonds, yeah.
That's right, right into the Treasury. All right, right now, because so many people are worried about the safety of their money, they're buying all these Treasuries, and Treasuries don't have to pay very much interest to attract them, do they?
No, not right now.
That may
change, but not right now.
That's right. So if you want to buy these, my suggestion is you buy them with a maturity of 2 years or less. Because you're going to deal with inflation as time goes by. I mean, even if you're dealing with low inflation, compared to what we've had in the last 2 years, when the economy was flat on its back, when the Federal Reserve is trying to fight disinflation, where something like we saw during the Great Depression of the 1930s, we've gotten very comfortable with the fact that prices don't go up, they just go down. Well, not anymore, because the economy is recovering. So anytime you have a recovery, that happens. And also when you have the issues with commodities like oil and gold and precious metals and copper and things like that, you're going to see prices go up. So you have to be aware of what's happening around you.
Absolutely. We're talking to Lynn Jimenez, everybody, who is a broadcaster on KGOP in San Francisco, also author of the book Sahabla Dinero. We're talking about how to hedge your investments in these turbulent times. Lynn, you've mentioned the inflation word more than one time here,
right.
And there is controversy about whether inflation is coming or not. Anybody who pulls up to the pump here in California, of course, experiences inflation in gas prices, anybody who buys food. However, when the government looks at inflation rates, they exclude both gas and food from the core inflation rate that's there. Do you foresee inflation coming down? And if you do, what sort of strategies do you employ to protect yourself against the inflation?
Very good questions. First of all, make sure that you've got the difference between increased cost of living that may be temporary and inflation. Inflation is when a very broad number of services and goods increases in price for a substantial period of time, or at least a prolonged period of time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, when we've got emergencies in the Middle East and Japan and whatnot, you know, fear and speculation, as much as demand or anticipated demand, are what's driving those prices. Now, you can say, well, that's all well and good, but it still boosts prices, and certainly we see oil inflation seeping into other areas of the economy.
Sure.
So I think what I'd say is don't panic, keep your powder dry, wait a little bit before you decide that inflation is marching in. That's number one. Because we have so much excess capacity, and because wages are not going up at all. So, you know, if there is to be any inflation, it would probably be in commodities, okay? Nevertheless, as I said earlier, when an economy recovers and people's spending power recovers, then companies have pricing power. And we're seeing that firms with very wide profit margins are trying to protect those margins if they're in businesses that sell commodities like cereal and gasoline and whatnot, by passing price hikes on to consumers. And
sure,
that's where you see some inflation.
All right.
To protect yourself, you can buy Treasury inflation protected securities, TIPS, or I-bonds. They're both tied to the Consumer Price Index. The I-bond has a fixed rate that applies until it's mature and a variable portion that changes every 6 months according to the Consumer Price Index. If you buy TIPS, you pay taxes on your earnings as you get them. You buy TIPS and I-bonds from Treasury Direct, you know, www.treasurydirect.gov. You open an account electronically. You can buy I-bonds with as little as $25 and TIPS with as little as $100.
Wow. Great tip on TIPS. We're talking to Lynn Jimenez, everybody. Now, Lynn, it's very interesting. You've written the book Sahabla Dinero, and you sort of bridge two cultures. What are the primary differences that you see between Hispanics and non-Hispanic cultures when it comes to money, and particularly investing money?
Well, I see a lot of universal things that apply to both cultures, and that is when you don't know much about money, you tend to do the wrong thing, okay? But I think the thing that I see among Hispanics, and certainly my family, is a very conservative approach to money. I think we recognize, because we come from cultures where the only way to get ahead really is to save, and we're good at doing that, but we're not good at making the most of our savings, which is why I also advise people to use things like stock indexes, like the S&P 500, dividend-paying stocks to enhance your capital preservation desires. Now, I also find that there is a lot of emotional turmoil that goes on with handling money, a lot of guilt. And I think that the most important thing to recognize is that money is not in itself good or bad. It's simply a tool. It's something with which you can do good or bad. It can pay for your child's education. It can help other people rise out of poverty. It puts food on the table. It puts shoes on your feet. On the other hand, you can gamble it and drink it away and misuse credit and end up in the drink, right?
Right.
So you have to look at it as a tool. And you teach yourself how to use a tool. I don't know any carpenter who hammers from the wrong end, you know, or who doesn't know how to use a level, or a bricklayer who doesn't understand how you use the trowel for the mortar, or a teacher who doesn't understand how to use textbooks to educate kids. Everybody has a different tool. And so you should take time to learn how to use that tool, that money. Ask questions of your bank. Go online and study and research money. Ask questions of people you respect, people you trust. Don't have your taxes done, for instance, by the hairdresser who does taxes on the side in the back of her salon. You know, use common sense. Never sign a credit application for a relative. You know, there are little simple common sense things. And remember, our culture is one of giving and loving, right? And I find that when you give money, more comes in and takes its place, and you feel good about what you've done, and you do well at the same time.
It is the old law of attraction. We're talking to Lynn Jimenez, everybody, from KGO up in San Francisco. Lynn, in the just the few seconds that we have left, what I want to ask you, because you've written this book, Hablo Dinero, for investing people, and it's very interesting. It's both in English and in Spanish. What did you get out of writing Hablo Dinero?
Hablo Dinero, to me, was a mission. I had to do it. It was, I had no control over it. I had to do it. And the fact that it's page to page, English and Spanish, I felt would not only help Spanish speakers, but English speakers who wanted to learn about money and learn about a language at the same time. So what did I learn? I learned that it's not brain surgery, okay? I learned that it's really pretty simple. When I sat down to write what I needed to tell people about money so that they wouldn't be frightened of it, so they'd learn how to use it wisely, I realized so much of it was common sense. And so much of it had to do with reading and paying attention to what you're doing. And it made me feel more confident about the book, and it made me feel more confident as a financial reporter.
Ah, that is great, and that is a great lesson to learn from writing the book as well. We've been talking to Lynn Jimenez, everybody. Lynn, you speak with such common sense, with such an ease and such an authority. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you advise them to go on the Internet?
Okay, well, I do have a site that hasn't been updated. My apologies for a very long time, but you can just Google Lynn Jimenez, and you'll find out a lot about it. You can go to Hablo Dinero. Now, I want to be perfectly honest with you. I wrote the book in 2006. It still is extremely useful. But there are segments. You know, last year, they changed the tax code and a lot about school loans.
Sure.
And those two areas are a little bit out of date. You can always tune in to the Internet, to the Bob Brinker Show, on occasional weekends in your very own community. And I'm not going to advertise KGO when I'm on your air.
I appreciate that very much. We've been talking to Lynn Jimenez, everybody, author of the book, Hablo Dinero, as well as a KGO reporter. Lynn, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. It's been an honor. I appreciate it, and I respect what you do.
Oh, thank you so much, Lynn. We'll talk to you soon.